You are listening to a programme from BBC Radio 4.
Order, order.
Good evening, this is Susan Hume at Westminster, where Ed Miliband and David Cameron clash over leadership, taxes and whether to take heed of the advice of pop stars. Also, Labour forces a vote backing government policy on the European arrest warrant, to the disgust of the Home Secretary.
She is determined to try to score political points about it, even though we are in agreement.
A former Russian Prime Minister paints a bleak picture of his country's future.
We now just authoritarian state, quietly moving to totalitarian one.
And peers vote for a clampdown on modern-day ticket touts.
Nobody loses out from this regulation, apart from those who are seeking to make huge profits by mis-selling or defrauding consumers.
But first, David Cameron has defended his policy to reduce housing benefit for people in social housing who are deemed to have more rooms than they need, despite a High Court challenge. There's to be a judicial review following the case of a woman and her son who live in a home that's been specially adapted to protect them from her violent ex-partner. The case was raised at Prime Minister's Question Time by Ed Miliband, who was first greeted by a loud, ironic cheer from the Conservatives.
Let's see if they're still cheering on Friday, Mr. Speaker.
Friday being the day we know the result of tomorrow's by-election. Once everyone quietened down, Mr. Miliband put his question.
Mr. Speaker, can the Prime Minister tell us why he's so in favour of the bedroom tax, but so against the mansion tax? Yes.
The Prime Minister started with the politics.
Well, first of all, I make this prediction. The people behind me will still be cheering him on Friday.
And he moved on to the policy.
It's a basic issue of fairness. You don't get that subsidy if you're in private sector rented accommodation. And so in our view, you shouldn't get it in public sector rented accommodation. It's as simple as that.
Ed Miliband wanted to spell out the position in this case.
He tries to defend the bedroom tax. Let me just tell him, on the bedroom tax today, the government is going to court against a victim of domestic violence who has been raped, assaulted, harassed and stalked by her ex-partner and is going to be charged the bedroom tax on her panic room. She's one of 280 victims of domestic violence in this category. Can he just remind us why that's the right thing to do?
This is why we have a discretionary housing payment system with money made available to council after council, and up to date, that money has been underspent.
The Labour leader got up again to say protecting the victims of domestic violence should be a matter of principle. But he wanted to move on to Labour policy.
Now let's talk about the mansion tax. Recently, a penthouse... Recently, a penthouse in Hyde Park sold for £140 million. Is he really saying that someone in that house should say that in that penthouse should pay the same amount of annual property tax as someone in a house worth a fraction of that value?
Labour's proposal is to impose a mansion tax on properties valued over £2 million. The Prime Minister insisted he'd already made sure the rich made their contribution.
We put up stamp duty. We put up stamp duty on empty properties. We're charging foreigners property that come and invest in our country. But the point about this is what we need is a growing economy that's providing the jobs, the livelihoods for our people. That's what we're getting. Whereas what he's had in the last week is a pasting from a pop star.
Ed Miliband was taken to task for his mansion tax idea on TV this week by the singer Mylene Klass. She told him that in the southeast of England, £2 million properties weren't necessarily mansions. She said, "Have you seen what that amount of money can get you? Often it's like a garage." Ed Miliband wasn't sympathetic.
That's exactly what I expect from this Prime Minister. He only feels the pain of people struggling to find a £2 million garage. That is this Prime Minister.
And he added, we needed a mansion tax to pay for the NHS, which was missing targets for waiting times. David Cameron came back.
I'll tell you what is happening in the NHS. Nurses up by 2,500 under this government. the number of doctors up by 8,000 under this government. Millions more patients treated, all because we put in the extra money that they said was irresponsible.
Now, it's been reported that the government chief whip, Michael Gove, has told Conservative MPs they don't need to come along to Westminster on Thursdays, but can concentrate on campaigning in their constituencies instead. And even though the general election is 6 months away, it's clearly at the front of politicians' minds.
We're going to campaign on the NHS between now and the general election, because he has failed. He has failed on the NHS. We all know, Mr. Speaker, why this Prime Minister thinks the bedroom tax is great and the mansion tax to fund the NHS is terrible. If you've got big money, you've got a friend in this Prime Minister. If you haven't, he couldn't care less.
The Prime Minister pressed where he believes is a vulnerable point.
This was the week when Mylene Klass wiped the floor with him in a television programme, and this was the week when there was an opinion poll in Scotland that showed that more people believe in the Loch Ness Monster than believe in his leadership. The only problem for the Labour Party, is he does actually exist.
Well, after that, backbench MPs had their chance for questions. Today, Ofsted reported that vulnerable children in England are at risk of sexual abuse because of council failures. Labour's Sarah Champion, the MP for Rotherham, said that in addition...
South Yorkshire police officers are being investigated for failing victims of abuse. I raised all of these issues in April. I've raised it with ministers. Yep. I've raised it in PMQs. What will it take for this government to help vulnerable people? Yeah.
David Cameron agreed the Ofsted report was important and it showed how agencies needed to work better together. Earlier, a Conservative, John Barron, asked for more help for nuclear test veterans.
One in three of their children have a serious medical condition, with 20% of conceptions ending prematurely. In the hope that this PMQ will be third time lucky, will the government make an ex gratia payment of £25 million into a charitable fund in order to help those veterans and descendants in need? After all, we only have to ask them once to do their duty and stand in front of a nuclear bomb.
David Cameron said he'd listened very carefully. Further discussions were underway and he did want to get a resolution on the issue. Now, the Home Secretary has brushed aside claims from Labour that she's been ducking and diving over the controversial European arrest warrant. Tonight, the Commons backed the measure in a debate called by the opposition. But further doubts and reservations about it were expressed on both sides of the chamber. Peter Mulligan reports.
The European arrest warrant allows much faster extradition of suspects from one EU country to another. But last week, the government surprised MPs by denying them a specific vote on whether or not the UK should rejoin the scheme. There were loud protests, not least from Eurosceptics, who fear that it cedes sovereignty to the justice systems of other countries. Opening the Labour-inspired debate, the Shadow Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, offered this sentiment to Theresa May.
I am glad that she has decided to support our motion today. It would, of course, have been so much easier if she had just been straightforward in the first place.
Her Labour colleague Andrew Gwynn intervened.
But isn't the real issue here a matter of democracy, in that the elected House of Commons has not been given the opportunity to have a say from whichever side of the debate members come from on these issues? And isn't the real reason behind that because it will show the deep schism on the benches opposite on the issue of Europe?
Yvette Cooper thought that was right.
That, in the end, I think, is what it comes down to, because the honourable members opposite, sadly, just too many of them, don't want to vote for something because it's got the word Europe in the title. And in the end, that is what the Conservative front bench have been running scared of.
Mrs May wore a smile throughout much of that speech, and when she spoke, she said that the government had not been bound to give a specific vote on the arrest warrant. Yet, she told Yvette Cooper...
She is determined to try to score political points about it, even though we are in agreement on the substance of this motion.
And the Home Secretary set out her case simply...
The government saw last Monday's debate and vote as a debate and vote on the whole package of 35 measures, including the arrest warrant, which we want the UK to remain part of in the national interest.
But sceptics on the Conservative side intervened, among them Sir Gerald Howarth.
By opting into this European arrest warrant now, it will be in perpetuity, and we will forever be subject to the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice unless we leave the European community. And that is what upsets, and that is what is concerned to so many of us on this side of the House, and indeed in the country, that we are surrendering a power to the European Court of Justice over which we have no control whatsoever.
Mrs May held out hope of change.
My honourable friend uses the term in perpetuity. I do believe that, I mean, we have the opportunity, if we have a Conservative government after May 2015, to renegotiate a relationship with the European Union. There will be a number of issues that will be within that. Both I and the Prime Minister have already indicated, for example, that free movement should be within it. And I think the relationship with the European Court of Justice is another candidate for consideration in those negotiations.
The Labour chair of the Home Affairs Committee, Keith Vaz, though, wasn't happy.
I will not be voting tonight. I'm sure my extra vote won't count for very much, Madam Deputy Speaker, because this measure will be passed. But it's my only way of expressing the exasperation that we have not had sufficient time to discuss these matters and looking at the real detail of what is in the European arrest warrant.
A Conservative former Home Office Minister, Damian Green, tried to be practical.
If we set the word European aside for a moment, I know that that's difficult, but if we set that aside, this is an international arrest warrant. As such, what it does simply is speed up the work of the police and the courts. It means that criminals and terrorists, once they're caught, can either be brought back to Britain for crimes committed abroad or be removed from this country to face justice elsewhere in Europe. So, saving time and money, I'll give away in a second, in our prison system.
The Labour backbencher, Graham Stringer, said this wasn't just about the speed of the process.
It is the fact that by entering the European arrest warrant, one is giving mutual recognition to courts throughout the European Union and one is passing sovereignty over to the European Court of Justice.
He said criminal justice in, for instance, Croatia, Romania and Bulgaria was subject to corruption and political interference, yet arrest warrants from those countries would be recognised here. Other Eurosceptics on the Tory side also spoke out, but in the end, MPs voted by an overwhelming majority to back Labour's motion, supporting the government's move to rejoin the European arrest warrant, as well as 34 other justice and home affairs measures.
Peter Mulligan reporting there. You're listening to Today in Parliament. Still to come, in these hard times, what's to become of local public libraries?
They will just hand over the keys and say goodbye, and that will be a disaster.
But first, one of President Putin's leading political opponents has told peers the Russian leader could be out of office within 2 years if the country continued to head for economic collapse. Mikhail Kasyanov, a former Russian prime minister, urged the West to offer no olive branches to Mr. Putin, but instead ramp up its policy of sanctions. Viv Robbins reports.
Only a few days ago, Mr. Putin left the G20 summit in Brisbane early after what were described as robust exchanges with Western leaders, including David Cameron, over Russia's interventions in Ukraine. This time the criticism was closer to home, from the man who was Prime Minister of Russia from 2000 to 2004 and is now co-leader of a pro-democracy opposition party. Mikhail Kasyanov told a Lords committee inquiring into EU-Russia relations that after the incursion into Georgia, to which he said the West had closed its eyes, President Putin had not been expecting the tougher line it had taken over Ukraine.
He believed that he would separate interests. The United States would be isolated, maybe Great Britain too, but some European countries, continental countries, would perform as before, just so-called real politics, and will close eyes for all those accumulations. But he was shocked by the unity position and strong attitude.
There was no room for compromise and the West should stay strong, he said. But, wondered the Labour peer Lady Billingham, what about the recent warning from the former Soviet president Mikhail Gorbachev that the world stood on the brink of a new Cold War?
Mr. Gorbachev a few days ago suggested the way to take the heat out of this crisis would be for the EU to remove the sanctions, and that would be a way forward. Do you think there's any feasibility in that, or do you think that that would do the trick?
No, I don't think it's feasible at all.
If anything, he said, sanctions should be strengthened, for example, to take in members of the Russian parliament. The Labour peer, Lord Radici, wanted to be sure he'd heard it right.
You're saying we should just hold things as we are, hold sanctions together, and not offer any olive branch of any sort to the present regime in Russia after the way it's behaved. I mean, if I could summarise what you've been telling us. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
Or, to put it another way,
no deal with Putin is basically what you're saying.
I think that's the case. That's already, for me, it's evident. I already see that you're moving this path, and I think that's right.
With Russia's reserves being squeezed and problems in the oil and gas sectors, the independent peer Lady Cussons wondered what lay ahead for the country and its leader.
How do you consider that President Putin would respond to internal economic stresses? Is the Putin regime sustainable? And how can the EU prepare for a post-Putin period?
Mr. Kasyanov painted a bleak picture of Russia's present condition.
We now just authoritarian state quietly moving to totalitarian one. That is important feature. That's why for Mr. Putin, that's important just to switch attention of people from internal problems and problems in the economy to external. That's important for him to find an external enemy and to impose a mobilization spirit on the society.
As for the state of the economy, Mr. Kasyanov thought the crunch would come in just a couple of years.
During these 2 years, the reserves which government has now will be exhausted. And then Mr. Putin should, during this time, should make a choice whether to build up a quiet exit strategy for himself and his team or just to move country further to collapse and to disaster. That's why we should stay stronger right now, because that's already just the end, beginning of the end of this process.
Winding up the proceedings, the committee chairman, the Conservative Lord Tugendhat, thanked Mr. Kasyanov for being, as he put it, extremely frank and clear. But it seemed the witness was determined to have the last word, intended perhaps for a wider audience beyond the committee room. He hoped, he said, they would continue to take a principled stand.
Viv Robbins reporting there. The government was defeated in the Lords tonight as peers made a bid to clamp down on ticket touts. Peers backed an amendment to the Consumer Rights Bill, which would require certain details to be established every time a ticket for a sporting or music event was sold on from a first purchaser to a second. It was put forward by the Conservative former Sports Minister, Lord Moynihan.
All that is now proposed is the name and location of the tickets and or booking number, together with a tick box of whether resale complies with terms and conditions. This takes about 15 seconds to type in. Fractions of the time compared to what we have to go through to establish our profiles and register with a secondary selling site. But it gives the consumer the information he or she needs to check the validity of the ticket.
He said making clear these facts would substantially reduce counterfeit ticket activity. The former England ladies cricket captain, Lady Hayhoe Flint, another Conservative, said it would give the online ticket buyer as much protection as a person buying from an event organiser. Earlier this week, she'd gone online to see what cricket tickets were available.
I found more than 5,000 tickets being sold for next summer's Ashes Test Series. This is absolutely flabbergasting. These tickets have only just gone on sale, and it's inconceivable to me that now such a large number of tickets have been bought by consumers who now find 8 months ahead that they cannot go to the test matches. How very strange and coincidental is that?
Also in support was the Paralympic gold medalist and independent peer Lady Grey Thompson. She said young people in particular wanted to be able to watch sporting and music performers.
And it's about protecting those people and making sure that they have the ability to know that those seats are protected. My Lords, this is just, it's pragmatic. Nobody loses out from this regulation, apart from those who are seeking to make huge profits by mis-selling or defrauding consumers.
The former BBC and ITV chairman, Lord Great, now a Conservative peer, recalled a Royal Variety performance meeting between the Queen and the late comedian Tommy Cooper.
as Her Majesty approached Mr. Cooper, he jumped in and he said, Your Majesty, he said, do you like football? Her Majesty replied, actually, not terribly, Mr. Cooper. He said, can I have your cup final ticket? Whether this is an early example of a secondary market, I'm not sure.
He said events fraud was now a £1.5 billion problem, and he believed Lord Moynihan's amendment would help tackle it. But a Liberal Democrat, Lord Stoneham, was doubtful the proposal would work.
I would say that online selling and ticketing is a huge improvement, actually, in terms of control, than the old idea where tickets were sold by the street traders. So I think you need, instead of having an emotional look at this issue, which I accept there is a lot of emotion about it, just look at it very frankly and in great detail to see what you're doing here, because you're adding to regulation which is not already working, and you're not actually looking at the real areas where fraud is being perpetuated.
And for the government, the business minister, Lady Neville Rolfe, said Lord Moynihan's proposal might well push underground people who wanted to resell tickets legitimately. But later, peers voted 183 to 171 in favour of the former sports minister's amendment, a government defeat of 12 votes. Now, how well off are you feeling? New official figures show today that average earnings have fallen every year since the 2008 crash, back to the levels of the turn of the millennium. It was a finding that Labour peers used at question time to attack the government, while ministers maintained that wages were now on the way up. Simon Jones was watching.
New figures from the Office for National Statistics have shown that average weekly pay for full-time workers in the UK went up by just £1 in the year to April. That was the smallest increase in what a typical person was paid since 1997. And according to the ONS, when inflation was taken into account, weekly pay fell by 1.6% and stands at the same level as in the early 2000s. Labour's Lord Wood, an adviser to Ed Miliband, seized on those figures.
This government is presiding over a recovery in which wages, far from recovering, have continued to deteriorate. As a result, the public finances are getting worse, and social security spending targets are being missed by over £15 billion. The deficit continues to rise. Can the minister tell us why this is the case, and whether he agrees with me that in light of this, the Prime Minister's promise in October of further unfunded tax cuts lies somewhere between heroic and reckless?
The Treasury spokesman, Lord Newby, said growth in the UK was the highest in the G7 leading industrialised nations.
Unemployment has fallen by 324,000 in the last year, and that today the other piece of news which he omitted to mention is that the gender pay gap has fallen to an all-time low. Yeah.
And the Liberal Democrat, Lord Wrigglesworth, leapt to back up his party colleague.
The most important point is that 3 million people at the bottom of the earnings pile have been taken out of income tax completely, including 1.8 million women. At the same time, some £5.1 billion has increased in the take of the revenue over the past year. Is that not a classic example of a stronger economy and a fairer society?
It is, my lord.
The former Conservative Chancellor, Lord Lawson, joined in with a swipe at Lord Wood.
My lords, isn't it a bit cheeky for the noble lord opposite, who is the eminence grise of the party opposite, to talk about recklessness when his party's policy is to increase the deficit even more?
From Labour's front bench, Lord Davis of Oldham tried to bring the discussion back to the original question.
How will the deficit be reduced if, in fact, wages continue to fall as they have done for 71 out of 74 months, and versus the whole of the time of this administration, wages fall in real terms, so that in fact, of course, less tax is paid?
Lord Newby said that wages had started rising, and forecasters were predicting that would continue.
Simon Jones reporting. Memories of last winter, the wettest on record, were revived during a debate on flooding. Several MPs spoke of a lack of coordination they'd found between different agencies in their areas, both in matters of flood prevention and when the flooding strikes. This was the Labour MP, Rosie Cooper.
For example, when my constituency was flooded, each of the authorities was pointing at each other in terms of coordination. We do know the Lancashire County Council is the lead authority, but on the day, everybody looked to each other and nobody actually delivered. In fact, it was the firemen who rescued my constituents and the only people who came out of the day with real honour. Local authorities won't do sandbags, just don't actually engage in fixing the problem. Everybody wants to lead, but nobody wants to do.
A Conservative, Eric Olerenshaw, spoke about drainage and dredging in his Lancashire constituency.
Who is responsible, out of all these organisations, to come down to Pillingen Thurnham to look at those channels and say, we need to dredge them, otherwise hundreds of farms and hundreds of residents and caravan parks will be underwater? That's the problem.
The Environment Minister, the Lib Dem, Dan Rogerson, said progress had been made to ensure the next 4 months weren't a repeat of last winter.
Thanks to the tremendous effort by all those involved, all areas will have at least the same standard of protection as before last winter. Permanent defences have been restored to over 200,000 properties, and for a small number of sites where repairs are continuing, contingency measures such as mobile pumps and temporary flood defences have been put in place to ensure that communities are protected.
Dan Rogerson there. Earlier, Westminster Hall heard a plea for libraries not to be consigned to history. The Labour MP, Lynn Brown, said as a child she was inspired by the library that her mother took her to almost every day. The world opened up for me, she said, calling libraries radical and empowering places. But now she feared they were wilting. Ms Brown quoted the philanthropist William Seagart, recently asked by the government to do a review of England's libraries.
He continues, I am frightened and worried for the library network. In the Arctic blast of austerity, some authorities will struggle to know what to do with their library service. They will just hand over the keys and say goodbye, and that will be a disaster. Mr. Seacart hits the nail on the head.
The minister was Ed Vasey. He described himself as a proactive supporter of libraries.
The number of static libraries that have been closed is often exaggerated. The number, while it may be regrettable, is far fewer than people say. The action taken by this government has been active, to bring on board the Arts Council to provide leadership for libraries, to provide a £6 million fund to support cultural work in libraries.
Ed Vasey there. Our main news again. Ed Miliband has challenged the Prime Minister over cuts to housing benefit for women at risk from their ex-partners. But David Cameron's insisted extra money is available for special cases. And the government's been defeated in the Lords over tightening up on ticket touts. I'm Susan Hume. The editor was Keith McDougall. And that was Today in Parliament.
You can download many more BBC Radio 4 programmes for free. Find these at bbc.co.uk/radio4.